Welcome to the Young Turks election coverage. Huge, awesome, amazing primaries tonight. Arizona, Florida, Oklahoma runoff. Ben Mankiewicz, Cenk Uygur, John Iadarola. Later, Michael Schur will join us. Normally, we start kidding around and polls don't close for a while. Wrong. Florida has closed and we already have results. Go.
Yeah, so I want to start off with one of the races that I'm most, I guess, personally or emotionally or psychologically interested in, on the Republican side, actually. And so, look, the primary season, we've had a lot of cases of like the establishment Republican versus the just pro-Trump Republican. And today we've got at least two really good examples of that. And the best one, I think, in the entire country is the Republican primary for Florida's gubernatorial race. And there you had Adam Putnam, who I think is the state agricultural commission leader, the more establishment Republican candidate. And then you had Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis, you might remember from this show, ran the most obsequious, fawning political ad that I've ever seen in my entire life. When he's helping his kid to learn how to build a wall out of colorful blocks. Mm-hmm. He's just saying big league, huge, like he's just saying the catchphrases of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
As his wife like grins and bears the entire thing.
He also looks like he was crafted to be a Republican, mm-hmm. You know? Like, no, hair should be a little redder and a little squarer, mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. But it was pathetic the way that it was. Like, it was an ad where he's like, no, I promise you that my whole point in the Senate will be to kiss Donald Trump's ass.
Nothing in the ad about him. There's only, he says, you're fired. That's my favorite part. And he just says the catchphrases. And that's the ad. A professionally produced, look good ad.
But so, I don't know what the results are. I can't wait. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, it's not an unwise strategy because Republicans are authoritarian by nature. And so when he's a beta who is, you know, sucking up to the alpha, the other betas are like, oh, good move. Yeah. I mean, I'd do the same thing. I would kiss the alpha's ass. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we do, right? So I don't know what the results are. So that's why it's fun. I'm going to be really shocked if the establishment guy wins.
Well, I will tell you that the race has been called already.
It's been called. All right, this is so much fun. Don't you love elections? Come on.
I was really hoping to save this one for later. It has been called. And with 51% reporting, it's not quite a blowout. But Ron DeSantis with 55.9% of the vote, Adam Putnam down at 37.3%. Oh, yeah. So a nearly 20-point lead. By the guy who, I mean, look, he was a congressman. Some people in Florida obviously know who he is. I've covered him multiple times on my show, and I know nothing other than the fact that he loves Trump more than anyone. More than Melania, I think it's safe to say. And he's gonna be potentially the governor, certainly the Republican nominee.
Oh, governor, sorry, I said Senate earlier. Right again, what can I do? But to be fair, it's not just that he kisses Trump's ass. He has more name recognition, and he got even more name recognition after doing that preposterous ad. And like I just told you, Republicans don't mind that at all. They're like, yeah, that's they're authoritarian by nature. So, and if you dare criticize their dear leader, like Mark Sanford, gone.
I don't know that he had more name recognition. He's just a congressman from and Adam Putnam had run statewide to be agriculture commissioner. And he'd also been a congressman.
I hear you, but agriculture commissioner?
Okay, but I mean, they were both just congressmen. I mean, I don't know why one would be.
And I'll tell you why. Because lately, DeSantis has been in the news a lot. And almost every instance is for Trump kissed Trump's ass on the left,
probably generated
the right,
a lot
in the middle. Not just to add, but like he's one of the guys that goes on TV like, no, Donald Trump's right about everything, okay? I remember one time he came over to my house and F my wife. He was right about that, okay? I mean, look, she had it coming, literally. Okay, so no, he didn't quite say that, but he will defend Trump on anything. And so that's why he's been in the news a lot.
No, I don't doubt that he generated much more news, but I mean, coming into the race, he did not, I don't think he probably came in at a disadvantage name recognition. He probably turned it around with his obsequious flattery and support of Trump. That's probably, again, to your point, that's probably what did it.
Yeah, I wonder which side Big Sugar was on. So as you'll see, Florida, big sugar is a giant, giant factor that is not as much in other states. We'll talk about it a lot throughout the night, but we have more results, right?
Yeah, actually, we do have more results, and I want to get to the Democratic side because the gubernatorial race on the Democratic side, very interesting too. But we've been alluding to this ad that Ron DeSantis released, and you might think that we're exaggerating because that's literally our job. But no, we've got the ad. Let's take a look.
Everyone knows my husband, Ron DeSantis, is endorsed by President Trump, but he's also an amazing dad. Ron loves playing with the kids.
Build the wall.
He reads stories.
Then Mr. Trump said, "You're fired." I love that part.
He's teaching Madison to talk.
Make America great again.
People say Ron's all Trump, but he is so much more.
Big league. So good.
I just thought you should know.
Yeah, it's one of the saddest things I've ever
seen. I had not seen that. So, of course, I'm going to have a totally different opinion. That's an incredibly effective political ad. They're both charming. They both deliver it well.
He's charming there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look, he's only trying to get one kind of voter. The question is, will he get that kind of voter? And I would say that ad leads him to get that kind of voter. And the correctness of my point is evidenced by the thorough whooping that he just delivered on Adam Putnam tonight. Now, I don't know whether that will work in a general election, but I mean, I watch people deliver ineffective ads here where they are stiff and awkward and don't seem personable, and he managed to construct a wall while not seeming hateful. The words,
yeah, not seeming hateful.
I don't doubt
that. To me, the image of this, like, I'm just going to, I understand I'm a race traitor or whatever. The image of this white man telling his little white baby to literally build a wall to block immigrants from coming in is one of the most disturbing images that I've ever seen in a political ad. Imagine any other wall existing or proposed around the world and this transposed to that in a political ad. It is disgusting.
We're going to have the same argument that we had about the language of Israel and Palestine. I'm not going to disagree with, I don't doubt what's in his heart, and what's in his heart is black, right? I'm talking about this is a television ad. It is literally sending out an image and words, but the images usually count more. And the image there is pretty effective. He's got a nice smile. His wife's timing is good. His timing is good. Like, and he seems, again, emphasis on the word seems, he seems likeable, which is exactly what you want and what all of us should be more afraid of, is that the country may eventually become inoculated to some charlatan like Trump who can't sort of hide his ignorance. I am always and continue to be more worried that the next Trump will be affable, right? Mm-hmm. And likeable and able to sell a wall, and is as like that guy, probably great to his wife and is probably good to his kids, unlike Donald Trump, who we know isn't.
Okay, last couple of things here on this, then we're going to give you more results. First of all, you know how I was kidding around about how, Donald Trump F my wife, and he was brilliant. But in that ad, he has his wife talking about how great Donald Trump is, right? So in a sense, I mean, like, and I don't disagree with what you're saying, Ben. They don't seem fake like politicians. They did a good job of like, hey, isn't this great? Right, we're teaching them to hate Mexicans. Mm-hmm. Like it's so much fun the way that we hate them, right? And he has his wife doing his bidding for him in a sense. And they think, I just predicted earlier. I think, yeah, of course. The only thing that matters now for the Republican Party is if you are pro or anti Donald Trump. That's it. And I think that they're following a guy who has lost his mind. And I'm going to laugh my ass off to the DeSantis's of the world when Trump is ridden out of office. And then people later write 20 books, because every single person in that White House will write a book and will give you all the amazing details. And people that you like, Kellyanne Conway said it. Sarah Huckabee Sanders said it. John Kelly said it. It turns out he was a lunatic. And they always knew he was a lunatic. And then his IQ was barely above 50. And all these idiots were following him like lemmings. Like, oh, Donald Trump, bigly. I mean, if Donald Trump is that stupid, how stupid are you?
The thing is, we know how this industry that I guess, at least in some way, we're a part of works. I've been looking out and I've seen every right winger is rushing to publish their Trump book. Why Trump won, why the libs don't get it, why they're crying tears, whatever. And so they're all rushing to do it. They're going to look ridiculous. They're basically, some of them will publish their book right in time for him to be indicted. But it won't matter. they're not going to lose jobs or positions. They'll turn around. I mean, they were for totally different Republicans 10 years ago. Now they're for Trump. They'll be for, you know, Ted Cruz or God knows what in 10 years. We learn nothing. It doesn't matter if you ever get a prediction right. You had a segment on your show that used to be about that one individual, not remembering his name. Crystal ball, worst predictions in politics, Republican. Yeah, we're gonna try to get it. Anyway, we do have other results though, and we've missed a couple iterations of it getting tighter. So you want to turn to something exciting?
He had not been declared
what
the
was
winner.
What was his name? What's that? I've seen he's been declared since
Dick
I opened my laptop. Dick Morris, yes, the worst predictor in politics.
Okay.
Anyway, we turn back to Florida in the Democratic primary. So Andrew Gillum has been endorsed by, it's a long list, Our Revolution, PCCC, National Nurses Union, Democracy for America, Nurses Working Families Union. Party. Yeah, who wants a nurse on their side?
So guys, the Andrew Gillum race is arguably the biggest race of the whole night. So he was on Rebel headquarters, and you can see why all those people endorse him. He is dynamic. He's interesting. He's really accomplished and strong progressive. So
yes,
on pins and needles on this.
So we're at 66% reporting, and as of right now, Gwen Graham, his chief competitor, is currently up by 0.9 points. It's 33.4 to 32.5. And while we've been talking, it's narrowed from like 4 points down to less than one.
He's down 10,000 votes. When we started this little thing, he was down 34,000 votes.
Yeah, and we're saying 10,000 out of 1.15 million.
Guys, if Gillum wins, that's a huge win for progressives. And so now the bad news is 66% reporting. The good news is, it's down to 10,000, under a point. But a close election in Florida, no one could have seen that coming.
The good news, like little things, I don't know how these votes are going to break down. I really don't. These are all Democrats. But in Miami-Dade County, where many precincts have reported 594 out of 672, he's ahead.
He's from Miami.
Right. So you'd think that Palm Beach, Broward, Miami would be among his strongest candidate, where he does best.
And have a majority, have they reported more than 66%?
Palm Beach, for example, where he's actually running third in Palm Beach, and they're at 22%. He's actually the third place guy, Philip Levine, who must be from Palm Beach, is actually running second. But Broward County, where you would expect him to do well, which is a gigantic, big county. Anyway, he's at, they've reported zero of 577 precincts.
Oh, okay. Mm. All right. We think that might be good news.
Yeah.
But quick, this is a story we probably talk about most on these nights. In that famous 2000 election in Florida, the only way that Gore would have lost any recount in the state of Florida is if he got his way and had... they had only recounted Dade, Broward, and Palm, the three counties that went most to him. It turns out that was a mistake. And if they had recounted the state, the whole state, he would have won and won the Electoral College. So he was definitely robbed. But that's why sometimes in a recount, you don't want them doing that. You want them looking at all the different things. But in a primary, in a situation like this, when it's just an election, if your districts have not reported yet, that's good news because they're more likely to come into your side. So what do you got?
So if 1 point is a tight race, how do you like 0.3?
Oh, here comes.
And we're looking at
and a new leader.
I had not even realized didn't realize he jumped. I thought it was 4,000 he was down.
How's that for growing the lead?
Wow, okay. That was a bigger jump than I thought.
Here comes Gillum. This is super exciting, guys.
Yeah. It's funny because the other county I checked where he won, he handily, of course, was the other county that Gore recounted, which was the three in South Florida and Duval County, which is Jacksonville, and Andrew Gillum did extremely well there, but they're finished.
Yeah.
They're counted up.
Mm-hmm. And
we're only at 67% reporting, by the way. So that flip didn't actually take much.
Yeah, I mean, well, Broward's that's a lot of votes in Broward County, not yet counted.
Yeah, to be fair, I don't know where she's from.
We'll look her up. So Broward is for those who Broward is right above Dade County, below Palm Beach County. It's where Fort Lauderdale is the biggest city in Broward, but there are a lot of big towns in Broward, and there are a lot of people in Broward.
So Andrew Gillum, already in politics, young guy, had a long list of accomplishments, and the reason why progressives were excited about him is because he's a fighter, and he went when he was in office, he fought for progressive principles, and he won a lot of those fights. So like you could tell how dynamic and interesting he was. And this is not a situation like Ben Jealous winning the governor's race in the primary in Maryland. Ben Jealous is a Just Democrats. It was very important, huge Bernie Sanders surrogate, really, really important for Ben Jealous to win, arguably bigger than this one, but less of a surprise.
Yeah.
We knew that was going to be a tight contest from the day that it started. And it turned out at the end it wasn't that tight. Ben Jealous won fairly easily. Now, the other guy had all the establishment behind him, but Ben Jealous was the former head of the NAACP and had tremendous name recognition and also had a lot of people behind him, even powerful senators. Andrew Gill, when he started, had no one behind him. And the entirety of the establishment was on Graham's side. And in Florida, in almost every one of the Rebel Headquarters interviews I did, progressives would bring up Big Sugar, okay, who I was convinced was a rapper in Florida. But it turns out.
A good rap name.
Yes.
Definitely. You're right about that.
turns out, of course, is a really, really important lobbyist, of course, in Florida. That's a big group, obviously, representing all the sugar industries. And Gillum was also talking about it as well. All these industries that give to these establishment Democrats, that's why they never get anything done for you guys. Because they actually work for those people. So I got no use for them. So every once in a while, people say, like, after a progressive loses, they're like, okay, now you need to get excited about the other Democrat. No, I don't. I need to vote for that person because I don't want Republicans winning. I don't need to get excited about them.
Let me tell you a little bit about Gwen Graham. So she is everything that's wrong with this country. It's not Gwen Graham's fault. I'm not knocking her in this. So she beat Steve Sutherland in 2014. So this is why I knew who she was. She was one of two Democrats. I didn't realize it was the same person, but she was one of two Democrats in 2014 to flip a seat for Democrats, right? Mm-hmm. So she won a Republican seat in the 2014 election, which didn't go great for Democrats. Mm-hmm. She won by less than 3,000 votes. Prior to her swearing in, Graham said, I'm just reading from Wikipedia, Graham said, both parties need leadership in Congress, need new leadership. She would not vote for Nancy Pelosi. She voted for Jim Cooper of Tennessee. She voted for Cooper again when the House voted on the new speaker and John Boehner announced his resignation. She ranked ninth as the most bipartisan member of the U.S. House of Representatives during the 114th Congress. She obviously feels like, you know, she's got to appeal to the Republicans. She barely won the seat. On a scale of 0 to 100, her rating from the conservative lobbying organization, the American Conservative Union, was an 8. So, like, she's a moderate to conservative Democrat, part maybe because of where she is, and still the conservatives gave her an 8. And so this is why she's representative of the incredibly peculiar, like, that should be a Democrat they like. Nope, 8.
Yeah,
socialist.
Right, socialist, yeah.
And that's why they keep the Democrats keep losing in Florida, because they run people like her. Now, to be fair, she did win that race in a tough year. But Alex Sink, how many times were they going to run that person, who it turns out is a woman? Took me a couple of years to figure that out. Anyway, kept losing to Rick Scott. Wouldn't call him, wouldn't talk about the largest Medicare fraud in American history that Rick Scott's company committed. I mean, the guy is a criminal. So is Gwen Graham going to run super hard against Rick Scott if he wins? Against DeSantis, who we know has won, right? Or is she going to, like, all the establishment Florida Democrats going to play patty cakes? Very, very likely will play patty cakes. Well, I don't want to offend Big Sugar, and I don't want to offend the defense industry who also finances me, and I don't want to offend the rich and their tax cuts that they need. I don't want to do any of that. So they don't run a campaign. Andrew Gillum's going to come in with a whooping stick, and he's going to run a real campaign. The other reason why it's important is to test our theory that progressives stand a better chance, not a worse chance, of winning in purple states like Florida. So that soft ass stuff where you validate all the Republicans' points, it doesn't work. It hasn't worked in decades. They've lost 1,000 seats nationwide.
So
for God's sake, step aside, let Andrew run, and let him kick DeSantis' ass. And then we can shut up the people in Washington who are like, oh no, you gotta run towards the Republicans if you wanna win. No, you run against them. I know, revolutionary thought.
So here's a couple things about her that are super interesting. So she also then didn't run in 2016 because she got redistricted by Republicans in Florida, mm-hmm, to a district that in their hypothetical matchup would have been won by Mitt Romney with 64% of the vote in 2012. So mm-hmm. she was like, this is a losing proposition. Her choice was to run in a majority black district next door, which she could have done, but she didn't. She just stepped out.
Well, profile's encouraged. So
you know, you read about her. She's pretty good. She seemed more good after saying she's not going to run. Like then she was like, okay, now I have to appeal to these people a little less.
After it was relevant, she turned into someone who was. But that's what every Democratic politician do. After they retired, they're like, oh, by the way, everything's terrible. Sorry, I didn't do anything about it while I was in office.
But anyway, she's not as good as the other guy, but she's not a disaster. But she has an interesting electoral history.
Okay, so John, let's run
through
Florida. So before you go anything else, any update on Gillum? Because we're gonna
he's up by 0.6 now. We're up to 76% reporting.
Okay, that's great.
He's running away with it.
Yeah. It's like soccer.
Glenn Graham throwing the towel. Jesus, it's gone from 0.3 to 0.6. She can't come back.
Yeah,
stop dragging it out. Joe Lieberman would tell you to quit and get out for the good of the state.
And he would literally do it about Florida.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay. This is like soccer. He has a 1-0 lead with 30 minutes left to go. No chance of a comeback.
That's right.
Okay, it is hopeless out there. All right, so Andrew Gillum winning with 76% reporting. That's huge.
Yes. Well, I am glad that we had some, so far, good news, because I've glanced ahead and the rest isn't looking amazing.
Oh, okay. So
we've got a list of candidates that have been in Rebel headquarters. Some of them are Justice Democrats, which we will note at that point. Some are endorsed by other organizations. So far, not looking great. So in the 3rd District of Florida, we have Tom Wells, who's going up against Ted Yoho. You've interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
As of right now, it has not been called, but he's down by 24 points with only 13% left to come in. I don't know why they're not calling
him. We can go ahead and call that.
I think we can probably call that at this point.
Okay. Just to be clear, he's not down against Yoho. Yoho's on the Republican side.
Yeah.
This is a primary.
Yes.
Tom is a wonderful—
It's the district that Ted Yoho holds.
Yes. Tom's a wonderful physicist who's been doing theoretical math for 46 years, and the interview showed it. Okay, So all I'm saying is I'm not surprised by that result.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Bless his heart, though. He's a great guy.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so in the 7th district, we had Chardo Richardson, Justice Democrat.
Against a Blue Dog Democrat. So that's why that was important. She's an incumbent with a lot of name recognition and a lot of money. So it was everybody knew that was a tough road. So where are we at?
Well, she has a lot of name recognition, a lot of money, and a gigantic lead.
A lot of votes.
Because it's been called. Yeah. It's 86.2 to 13.8.
Yeah, it's a bit of a disappointing result.
That's tough. That's a tough one.
So in a nail biter, Stephanie Murphy. We'll be honest about it. She won. She won.
Yeah, but they're only
calling it like it is.
They're only all the precincts reporting.
They're only Hall.
Okay.
So how about some good news?
So there's still hope.
No, I don't think that's how hope works. Okay.
Here's some hope for you. Another Justice Democrat. This is Sanjay Patel in the 8th District.
Yeah, there you go.
Justice Democrat has won, and it's been called. It was uncontested. But
that's how we do it, brother.
But he won.
We scare everybody out of the race.
Scare them away.
Okay. They're like, you want to go up against Sanjay? Oh, no. You want to do it? Hell no. Okay. And all of a sudden, Sanjay Patel.
Yeah, I heard that, but.
There you go. Okay, jumping ahead to the 18th district, Pam Keith is a Justice Democrat, also endorsed by Move On. This one also has not been called, although Pam Keith is in second with a fairly big gap between them.
Oh, damn it. Okay, hold on. I want to talk to you guys about Pam Keith.
Oh, interesting.
Because she's so good. So, again, she was on Rebel headquarters, super dynamic, go-getter, aggressive in her positions. And even though she appears to be black, she's actually a Turkish American.
Mm. So you're biased.
So I am a little biased in her favor. It would have been great. Would that be the first Turkish American Congress? I don't even know. Anyway, she was born in Turkey because her dad was in the military. But kidding aside, all that is true, but of course, what I cared about was what a wonderful progressive she was. So apparently, she's down by a lot with 3/4 reporting. So that race is in reality. It pains me to say it, but that's over.
I was not able to find any evidence of Turkish-American congressmen or women. But I can't rule it out. Let us know if you find
one. All right.
Okay, to the 20th, where we had Sheila Cherfilas McCormick, who is down pretty decisively. We're only at 32% reporting, but she's down by about 51 points at this point. That's rough. You're seeing it right there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is in Florida, by the way. It's not on all the graphics, but all of the ones that we're going through currently are in Florida. We're expecting the Arizona is going to take a little bit longer to
come in. One of the things we do overall on the show, but certainly on election nights, is give you context. So put that back up. So you're looking at a number where she's getting killed 75-25, right? First of all, 32% reporting, so it's not over, but it's with 32%, it's getting close because it's such a big lead, right? But the person she's running against is Alcee Hastings. He is an incumbent, a really, really well-known incumbent, entrenched as...
Turns 82 years old this year.
Yeah.
Really?
And unfortunately, with a lot of incumbents, charges of corruption, and then that's the actual corruption.
Charges of corruption. He's impeached.
Yeah. And, but he's, you know, but you can't... And then there's a systemic corruption as all the donors, et cetera. And she is dynamic, young, another young African-American woman, wonderful, progressive. It just takes so much effort to unroot an incumbent. But don't get too discouraged on nights like this where the Pam Keese of the world don't win because... This is how you do it. You run once, you build up your name recognition, you build up your group of volunteers, your group of donors, et cetera, small donors in their cases, right? And then when you run again, you have a much, much better chance. The next time, Alcee Hastings will be turning 84, right? Yeah. So this is how we do it.
And there is little that's as, I guess, both discouraging and also depressing than the willingness in America for us to resend people to government that have been convicted of crimes, especially corruption. So I had not been aware of Alcee's charges, but we talked during one of the previous primary coverages of my hometown of Bridgeport, Connecticut. Had a mayor for 10 years. He robbed the city blind, like $750,000. Went to a federal penitentiary for almost 10 years. Comes out, becomes mayor again. And in the 50th district in California, we've got a Mark Abinajar, Justice Democrat, running against Duncan Hunter. He was just indicted, him and his wife, on 60 charges of corruption last week. A poll that came out today, it's tightening, but he's up by 8. He's facing 60 counts of misusing donor money. Donor money that those people who were polled have a good odds that they donated to him.
He's gonna go to prison, Duncan Hunter.
Yeah. The only question is whether the good folks in the 50th district sent him to Congress before he goes to prison or after he goes to prison.
Yeah.
And so... To give you a sense of how much the Republican Party has lost its mind, 77% of Republicans in that district still support him. That's not surprising. 72% say the indictment made it either did not change their minds or made them more likely to support him.
Sure.
Deep state.
Fact, that's the last one was the most amazing one. 64% of Republicans in that district said that they believe that it is a politically motivated conspiracy against him.
Yeah. And that's the thing. That's what... I've been complaining about this for more than a year. Trump taking fake news and just turning it into anything we don't like is fake news, combined with this construct of the deep state, which they took over. It used to be an actual term that academics used responsibly in analysis of politics and history. Now it just means whatever you want. Those two things are a get out of jail free card for every Republican in any situation. There's nothing that those can't free you of culpability for.
Yeah, when Hunter gave his press conference where he said his wife did it, which I'm gonna guess she was in on. I mean, she was aware of that.
Nah, he did it again. He did it three times. I don't know that she's in on it. Seems like they've got some issues.
Well, she's charged too. I mean, if he's throwing her under the bus, then he's just, legitimately without her consent, then he is desperate for her to say to the prosecutor, somebody's going to need to be around to take care of my children. So what do you need to put my husband away and I don't go to prison? So that's why.
Yeah, but remember, Donald Trump also throws people under the bus that he desperately needs because they're not that bright.
I got it, but we're in a critical moment for the Hunters, shall we say. A little. They're not facing a prison time. Yeah, it's so his tactic there where he threw his wife under the bus, that had nothing to do with defending himself in court. That was solely politics, solely an effort to get himself reelected.
But also, it's as I mentioned on the show today, it's a very poor lie. When you lie in two different directions, that is the biggest telltale sign that you're not telling the truth. Oh, it was the deep state plus my wife.
Right.
Which one was it, right? I mean, if somebody told me that in real life, I'd be like, immediately, you're obviously lying.
I mean, the craziness of the country, which we sort of, through Gwen Graham, sort of pointed out that, she's a fairly ninth most moderate bipartisan member of Congress in 2014. The American Conservative Union gives her a rating of 8 out of 100. Is that they're going to do it to us where everyone on this panel sitting here at some point, more than one time, is going to angrily defend Jeff Sessions. Like, that is how warped they've turned this into, because, of course, the person who authorized the prosecution of Duncan Hunter, that authorized the indictment of Duncan Hunter, let me say, was appointed by Jeff Sessions. These are all enormously conservative Republicans making this call on Duncan Hunter. This is these are not leftover crazy communist, it's not those communist lawyers that Obama left in office.
You want some more results?
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
So last I checked, Gillum was up by 1.1. It's slowly coming in at this point.
I got it, but he was down.
Oh, no, it is expanding. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, those votes are coming in for him.
We do have in the 24th district.
And by the way, let's say, because as we talk about Gillum, and it bears repeating throughout the night, I don't know a tremendous amount about, and I did praise the art of DeSantis's ad, but in general, every reasonable Democrat would rather face in this November would rather face a Trump apostle than a different Republican.
Yeah.
The crazier DeSantis is, the more he ties himself up in Trump, that'll help Gillum or Graham, hopefully Gillum, in November.
If Trump leaves office, if I'm right, and I know it's a giant if at this point because we're running out of runway here, but if Trump is convicted, not convicted, but leaves office within like 2 weeks before the general election.
I mean, in the midterms.
Yeah, in the midterms. They're going to be devastated. I mean, it's because, look, guys, the Trump guys are not going to move. We've talked about that a billion times, including just now. But they're only 34% of the country. All the independents are like, oh, it turns out he was a criminal. Oh, DeSantis's ads look a little different now, yeah. Right? Well, and so it's... If I'm anywhere near right on that, they're going to get devastated.
I hope so. I mean, there are certainly people who've been waging about a year now, a battle to convince you that regardless of what comes out, Trump didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And that will continue as well. But we do have more results. Just interesting note, it was called as we were talking. This is in Florida, by the way. The 24th district, Frederica Wilson easily won her primary. So her hat will be traveling back to D.C.,
yes,
I love
she is colorful.
Her outfits. Now, if we go to the 23rd district, so this is where Tim Canova is running as an independent. Mm. You've spoken with him on Rebel Headquarters. We had him on the Damage Report last week. So he's not involved in this primary, but he will indeed be running against Debbie Wasserman Schultz again because she has won unopposed her primary.
So he explained on Rebel Headquarters, and you can get that on youtube.com/RebelHQ, facebook.com/RebelHQ, or just become a member and you get all of our content, tyt.com/join. That's the easiest way to do it. And he explained why he was running as an independent instead of a Democrat. I have to confess that I was a little skeptical, but he had a surprisingly strong case about what went terribly wrong in his primary last time around. And he was like, I'm just not going to subject myself to that again.
The votes and all that, yeah.
Yeah, and so he's running as an independent. It is a very, very blue district. So who knows? Who knows? I mean, winning as an independent is incredibly difficult. So for all of the folks who get frustrated with the Democratic Party and go, why don't you just run as an independent? Because you have almost no chance of winning. There's like... two independents nationwide that have won at a national level.
Bernie and Angus.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they also essentially ran. I don't know this to be true, but frequently the independent runs supplanting the other party with the presumption like it wasn't. Nobody was. I wonder which side Bernie's going to caucus with when he gets to Congress. Like that was not an issue. Yeah. So, you know, it's very seldom is there a spirited three-way contest between a Republican, a Democrat, and an Independent.
And even in those, in Angus King and Bernie Sanders, they had huge name recognition. They had built up over a long career in that state, in small states.
Like Joe Lieberman winning as an Independent.
Yeah, yeah. That is right, a right. total, those are the exceptions that prove the rule. So Canova's up against a very tough situation here, but look, he made a fair point that the Democratic Party's he couldn't trust them. He didn't believe that they were running these races in a way that were legitimate, etc. Anyway, whether you believe him or not, he's going up against Debbie Wasserman Schultz. She won easily, as unsurprising. He gave her a much tougher race than she got tonight when he ran against her last
time. Well, she was uncontested this time.
Yeah, and remember, one last thing, sorry. Sure. You know, he doesn't have anywhere near the name recognition of Bernie Sanders in Vermont when Bernie was running as an independent. Not now, but back then, everybody knew Bernie Sanders in Vermont, right? But Canova now does have decent name recognition.
As you've said before, he ran before, and now he's running again. That's why I knew who he was.
It's not impossible. It's if it was the first time around, it'd be pretty much impossible. Second time, still low percentage chance, but it's at least a possibility.
We have one more Justice Democrat if we want to close out the state. In the 27th district, this is in Florida. Right now, Michael Hepburn, who is a Justice Democrat, is unfortunately in fifth place with 6.1% of the vote. Donna Shalala is currently... Shalala is at 31.9% of the vote.
So,
with 93% reporting.
This race, people were a little bit bitter at Donna Shalala. So she was in Bill Clinton's cabinet and then was dean of the University of Miami. And for whatever reason, the establishment wanted her in. So they're like, Donna, just go in and just take the race. And she did. So a lot of the other people in the race were pretty pissed. They just sometimes airdrop in. They got name recognition. They got all the endorsements. And they have a ton of money. But in the case of Michael Hepburn, if you finish fifth, it wouldn't have mattered anyway, right? But for the person who finishes second, they get to be a little bit more pissed about it. But it's a free country.
You know, can I just say, in terms of the money, sometimes when you look at the particular amounts that have been raised in primaries even, not even the general election, the primaries, for some of these smaller, seemingly smaller elections, it can be shocking. So we had a candidate for Broward County Commissioner on the Damage Report today. His primary opponent, Broward County Commissioner, has raised $220,000. It's not Congress, amazing. It's not Senate, it's not the president. No, $220,000.
That's what the Koch brothers did in Kansas. I mean, that's what they've done, is that sort of you want to replace the school board, you spend $600,000 on the school board. Literally no one spent any money on ads. Mm-hmm. They put up some flyers and so forth, and all of a sudden you're driving to work and you're blanketed with ads about the school board. You're like going to vote for the people you've heard of.
Yeah. Well, look, let's be fair and honest on this one too. So two can play at that game.
Yeah,
they don't often, but we do. So Wolfpack has done that a couple of times. State races are much easier to win if you've got a lot of money. So they raise money, $10 at a time, from real Americans, and they'll drop $50,000 on a state race, and good night, Irene. So this just happened in Maryland. That's why that night was amazing. It wasn't just Ben Jealous, and it wasn't just Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, but Wolfpack put Antonio 50K into Antonio Hayes' race. He was up against an incumbent for the state Senate race. He only beat her by 30, though. So, by the way, participate in that. When we target people, it is strictly to get money out of politics. I say we in that case because I founded Wolfpack. And so wolf-pack.com/stick. You know, politics are carrots and sticks. We're not playing. wolf-pack.com/stick. They're about to run a lot of campaigns, and they need your help, and it makes a big, big difference. Send a message not just to Republicans, but the Democrats that vote for corruption. We're going to get them out of office. We're going to make them fear us. And like they did in Connecticut, another race put $50,000 in, moved the race by 26 points. That was Cava in Connecticut. The newspapers, because unfortunately, they're not bad people who work those local newspapers, but they oftentimes aid and abet systemic corruption. So when we put that kind of money in against an incumbent, they're like, whoa, what are you doing? Hey, wait a minute, what are you doing, right? Is this fair for Wolfpack, who says they want to get money out of politics, to put so much money into politics? Yeah, goddamn right. There's a great way that you could prevent that. vote to get money out of politics, then we can't do that in the race. Otherwise, we'll see you next time. Wolf-pack.com/stick. You're going to love what they do with it.
I was just going to say that Wolfpack's electoral strategy is effectively why you're hitting yourself.
Yeah.
They'll use the tactic as long as they need to.
That's right. Good way to get us to stop.
So I'm interested in the results have started to come into Broward County. It says less than 1%. I can't believe that's true because it's 73,000 votes. That can't be 1%. They're not 7.3%.
No. What happens is the mail-ins come, so they say 1% reporting, but they drop all the mail-ins.
So the mail-in numbers are interesting in Broward and may portend good news for Broward, which we were hoping for Gillum, because he's basically tied. He's down 500 votes, 29,300 to 29,800, but to Philip Levine. Yeah. To the guy running in third place.
Great news. Great news.
And Graham is at 15,000. So Graham is basically at half those numbers.
Oh, excellent. He stands a terrific chance of winning now. So context here too, okay? So Ben's reading you the Broward County numbers. So Gillum is winning overall. At last we checked, 1.3 points overall.
1.1. About 15,000 votes.
Okay, he's winning by 1.1 points. None of Broward County had come in. Now the mail-in ballots for Broward County come in, but we weren't positive which way they were going to go. Gillum is basically tied.
He's down 500 votes, 29,300, 29,800, Levine at 800.
Right. But since the person getting the other votes is Levine and not Gwen Graham, who is his main competitor for the whole state, she falls further and further behind. Yeah. It's not like he's going to lose to Levine. He's running against Graham, so he loves those results in Broward.
Yeah, if those results hold, they won't. That would be then the race won't be close. Then he'll pull away. He'll be up 3, 4, 5 points as they start pulling in Broward. But even if those are just the mail-in numbers that they're now counting, that's 14,000 votes he got just there versus her in Broward.
Yeah, and one more piece of context on that is that Broward County is huge. It's one of the largest counties in Florida. So. That's also, if he pulls away in that county.
That's what I'm saying.
Then
he'd be up 3 or 4 points very quickly.
So look, bunch of losses for the Just Democrats in some of those congressional races. Some of them were expected, but still, of course, it's never good to see that. I had high hopes for Pam Keith. That doesn't look good. And Sanjay Patel has at least carried the flag forward in Florida. Mm-hmm. But most importantly is Andrew Gillum. It was a pivotal race. He's now up and trending in the right direction. So 79% reporting, that's really, really good news.
Yeah.
Some parts of Arizona are going to start to close as we get later into the night here. And of course, we have the runoff in Oklahoma as well. So Arizona has a whole heap of crazy in their race. You got the Republicans. You got one of the worst Democrats in the country in that race running against another Just Democrat, Deidre Abood. But that Democrat has so much money. So that would be shocking if she lost. So we'll explain all that. Stay right here. Coverage throughout. Oh, we got the exciting news, good news, bad news, ugly news. We got it all. So tell everybody else to watch. Anybody else doing this kind of coverage of these elections? Okay. Right now, MSNBC can't stop talking about Broward County.
I'm going to look.
Okay, my guess is if you tune in right now, they're talking about Russia.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sight unseen. There's no reason to talk about Russia today. It's not really in the news.
Give the update on the Florida update because it's good news.
All right. Here comes.
Oh, it has jumped up to 83% reporting. Andrew Gill now extending his lead to 1.8. percent.
Oh, yes. We're on the precipice of calling this.
Hold on. More importantly, Broward County. Well, I mean, that's why. It's up to 41% reporting in Broward County. He has now somewhat decisively taken the lead over Levine in that county.
He leads her by 24,000. So since they started, presumably as they started counting actual votes, he had a 14,000. If we're reading this correctly, we don't know. But if the first wave was just the mail-in ballots, it's a lot of mail-in ballots, but they do that in Florida because it's a the only thing they appear to be smart about there. He had 14,000, and then they've added, and he's picked up 10,000 more votes over her. It's good news.
Yeah, listen, guys, I get nervous on these election nights, so I'm not talking about maybe calling it if it doesn't look really good. So it's still a lot, 17% reporting, still a lot. His lead obviously is not huge, but 1.8, starting to get a little comfortable. So hang in there. We'll have more results when we return. We'll come back.